The following is an excerpt from the Science Magazine podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Now, David Graham, online news editor of Science Magazine, is here with a wrap-up of some of the latest science news, including a story about how chimpanzees kill for land. So scientists have figured out a motive for these killings?
Yeah, exactly. Scientists have actually known for decades that chimps kill each other. Ever since the mid-1980s, when Jane Goodall and some of her colleagues were observing chimps, they would see occasionally chimps kill each other, and it was unclear why they were killing each other. There was some speculation that they might be killing each other for resources or land, but it was really hard to show because a lot of these chimps had interactions with humans, and that was a confounding factor because you didn't know if this interaction with humans might somehow be influencing the chimps' behavior. So in this new study, which actually took place over the past decade, researchers observed chimps, but they really kept their hands off. They observed these chimps from afar and really tried to stay out of their business. And they were specifically observing male chimpanzees of a group called the Ngogo group. And this is a group of chimps in Uganda's Kibali National Park. And what the researchers observed is they also observed these chimps killing each other. And what specifically they saw is every couple of weeks, the males in this Ngogo group would form these patrols of several males. And these patrols would go out through the forest, and they would occasionally hear the sound of a solitary chimpanzee in a neighboring territory. And when they heard this, they would advance toward this chimpanzee and kill it. And this chimpanzee was usually an infant, although not always. And first of all, the researchers observed the killing, but what they observed after the killing was that these Ngogo chimps would move into the killed chimp's territory. So they seemed to be using killing as a way to add more land to their territory.
What do they get out of the additional land?
Well, it's kind of unclear. Researchers have speculated that they may get access to more resources, things like fruit trees, or even other females. If there's too many males, they might want to add more females to their ranks. And a way to do that is to kill off males of a neighboring group, move into that territory, and acquire the females, as it were.
Have researchers witnessed this?
Well, researchers actually haven't seen this happening with an Ngogo group. They said that no females from the vanquished group have joined the Ngogo group so far. So it may be as simple as the fact that the Ngogo group has a lot of males and that they just have enough numbers to really exert their force over these neighboring territories. And they may just be doing this to increase the size and the strength of their community, as humans have done over the millennia.
So this data is only looking at this one particular tribe.
That's what the researchers looked at in this study. But based on this work, it's possible this is actually happening elsewhere as well.
Okay. So what other stories have you brought with you this week?
Well, Rob, from short chimps to tall people, this next story is all about the genetics of height. What makes some people taller than others? Well, researchers have suspected that it has something to do with our genes, just like pretty much everything else about us. But it turns out, up to now, researchers have only found 5% of the genes responsible for the height differences between people. And this isn't just restricted to height. In fact, a lot of traits and a lot of diseases, which researchers thought, you know, there must only be one or two big genes for these diseases, researchers are actually finding that for a lot of these conditions, there doesn't seem to be these big genes out there. So there's been two camps. One camp says, these genes are out there. We're just not using sophisticated enough technology to find them. And we really got to ramp up our technology to find them. But another group says there are no more big genes out there for a lot of these conditions. There's just a bunch of really small pieces of DNA that account for these differences. And we really haven't been looking for them.
So nurture or environment rather than nature or genes?
No, actually what the researchers are saying is that the differences are, at least in this study, what they're saying is that these differences are really chalked up to very tiny changes in DNA, something called single nucleotide polymorphisms. And these are essentially single letters of DNA that vary from person to person. So whereas, Rob, I might have an A in a certain position on a gene, you might have a T there instead. And that's very tiny difference out of billions of letters of DNA could make the difference between you being a foot taller than I am, Rob. And researchers have actually looked at these SNPs, as they're called, for a variety of conditions. And they found occasionally that certain SNPs seem to correlate with certain conditions. But this team is arguing that you can't just look at these SNPs individually. You actually have to look at them in aggregate. And if you look at them, a lot of them together, you'll start to find a lot more of a correlation between small changes in DNA and potentially big differences in things like the difference between height in two people.
So what was the data for this study?
Well, what the researchers did was they focused on height, and they looked at height across a subset of the British population. And they tested 300,000 of these SNPs in each member of the population. So they're looking at an enormous number of these SNPs. And what they found was when they did this, they found that they could actually find a correlation between these large numbers of SNPs and height. In fact, they say they could explain 45% of the variation in height between people by just looking at these SNPs.
So before they were at 5%, now they're at 45%.
Exactly. And actually, height is only thought to be about 80% heritable. So they're more than halfway there in explaining the genetics of height, and definitely a lot further than we were before.
So the next step then is not necessarily to figure out more about height, but maybe to apply this same sort of thinking towards other conditions, diseases even?
Exactly. There's a number of other diseases like diabetes and heart disease and schizophrenia, which researchers all think have a strong genetic component. But again, they haven't found these big genes out there that explain these conditions. And this team is arguing, we'll go back and look at these tiny changes, but don't just look at the tiny changes by themselves. Look at a lot of these tiny changes in aggregate and see if when you add up a lot of these tiny changes, if they help explain some of these other conditions.
So a new way of looking at old data.
Exactly.
Okay. So last story, what's this last one about?
Well, Rob, from genes hiding in plain sight to a signal for space weather hiding in X-ray noise.
First, what is space weather?
Well, Rob, when a lot of people talk about space weather, they're talking about the solar wind. This is a flow of particles that's essentially emanating from the sun that spreads out into the solar system and specifically can impact the atmosphere of Earth. When you have things like solar flares, which are these ejections from the sun, they can actually disrupt really important communications equipment, satellites, a lot of stuff that drives our technology today. And right now, scientists don't have a really good way of predicting space weather. It's not like meteorological weather where you can say, you know, on Wednesday, the sun is going to do this. It's much more difficult to figure out exactly what the sun is doing. And also, even if you've had a problem with the satellite, engineers often don't know right away, you know, was that just a malfunction, or was it something that was caused by space weather? So this new study is all about, can we find a better way to monitor space weather?
And they're looking at X-ray noise?
Exactly. The discovery actually came about quite by accident, as happens with a lot of scientific discoveries. Astronomers using what's called the XMM Newton spacecraft, which is this craft that's out there looking for things like stars being born and black holes. The astronomers noticed that a lot of the images that the spacecraft was taking had the equivalent of sort of being overexposed or being grainy. They had this sort of noise in them, and the researchers couldn't figure out what that was. They took a closer look, and what they found is that when comets approach the sun, the solar wind generates low-energy X-rays when its charged particles hit neutral atoms in the tail of these comets. And what that does is it causes this X-ray distortion, which the researchers were picking up in their images. Well, that's only the first part of the story. Once the researchers realized that, they said, you know what? The solar wind is hitting the magnetosphere of Earth all the time. This is this almost like this protective bubble that shields Earth from solar radiation. And they said, you know, the same thing is happening. These low energy X-rays are being generated when the solar wind is hitting the magnetosphere. Can we image these X-rays being generated as the solar wind hits the magnetosphere and essentially create this map of Earth's magnetosphere? And that would tell us what's going on with the solar wind and hence space weather.
What kind of resolution then are they getting with this kind of thing? Is it basically just, okay, that was a solar flare, that wasn't a solar flare, so if something has malfunctioned, you just know what to look for?
That's exactly right. What they're suggesting is that we put a lot more technology into detecting these low energy X-rays. We really don't have a lot to detect them right now. And if we do, we can create this map. But even this map of the magnetosphere is really not going to help us predict what's going to happen with space weather. But it will tell us, say, a communication satellite all of a sudden goes on the fritz. You know, right now, if that happens, engineers spend a lot of precious time figuring out, okay, what happened? Was it space weather? Was it a malfunction? Was it something else? And depending on what happens, determines how they're going to fix it. But with a real-time map of the magnetosphere, researchers could say right away, okay, we just saw that there was a solar flare there, or there was some intense space weather near this satellite, and now we know what the cause was, and that's going to help us know how to fix it a lot quicker.
Okay. Thanks, Dave.
Thanks, Rob.
So what other stories are you looking into for the site?
Well, Rob, speaking of astronomy, we've got a story about how one alien world is experiencing winds of 7,000 kilometers an hour because of the way it's positioned near its sun. And also a story about how you can blame your tan or lack thereof on natural selection. And on Science's policy blog, Science Insider, we continue our extensive oil coverage. We've got a new story about how researchers might be able to use sonar to track oil plumes underwater. And also a story about quack stem cell therapies. These are clinics that are popping up around the world that promise to cure everything from cancer to blindness by injecting you with stem cells. And the scientific community is fighting back by publishing a list of a lot of these illegitimate stem cell centers so that patients will be better informed. And you can check out all these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out the latest science news and the policy blog, Science Insider, at news.sciencemag.org.